Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. And we begin today with a question that flows from Senator Rob Portman's endorsement of gay marriage last week. Is a politician's stand on an issue less meaningful if it stems from personal experience? What do you think? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, for example, did you cheer yesterday when you heard Hillary Clinton endorse legal gay marriage in this video?
A few years ago, Bill and I celebrated as our own daughter married the love of her life, and I wish every parent that same joy.
Did you cheer when you heard that yesterday? But did you sneer when you heard Republican Senator Rob Portman of Ohio also come out for marriage equality last week, citing his own son coming out to him? Here's about 45 seconds, if you've only heard that 10-second little snippet that everybody's playing. Here's about 45 seconds of Portman from last week.
During my career in the House and also last couple of years here in the Senate, you know, I've taken a position against gay marriage, rooted in part in my faith and my faith tradition, and had a very personal experience, which is my son came to Jane, my wife and I, told us that he was gay and that it was not a choice and that, you know, that's just part of who he is, and he'd been that way ever since he could remember. And that launched an interesting process for me, which was kind of rethinking my position, you know, talking to my pastor and other religious leaders and going through a process of, at the end, changing my position on the issue. I now believe that people ought to have the right to get married.
So, Ohio Senator Rob Portman, did you cheer for Hillary but sneer for Rob? Did you see her statement as an act of leadership on behalf of others, late though it may be, and his statement as an act of selfishness? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Here are two opposing takes on this question, both from Slate. One of their columnists, Matthew Iglesias, put this in the context of a large critique of conservatism, which he says has a total absence of empathy and a fundamental lack of compassion. And Iglesias wrote, "Rob Portman doesn't have a son with a pre-existing medical condition who's locked out of the health insurance market. Rob Portman doesn't have a son engaged in peasant agriculture whose livelihood is likely to be wiped out by climate change." He's obviously saying Portman, therefore, has not changed his position on global warming or on Obamacare. He continues, "Rob Portman doesn't have a son who'll be malnourished if SNAP benefits, food stamps, are cut. So Rob Portman doesn't care," concludes Matthew Iglesias about that in particular and the conservative impulse in general. But William Salatin, who also writes for Slate, asks, "Really? To me, it just confirms that flesh and blood relationships are more powerful than studies, rallies, or documentaries. That isn't a conservative defect. It's human psychology. In academic circles, it's called contact theory. And it's how President Obama explained his conversion on gay marriage last May."
Over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are in incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, when I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage.
So President Obama from last year and William Salatin and Slate basically asking, how different is that from Rob Portman, the president hanging it on people he's known professionally, even if not in his family? And one other thing before we go to your calls, I'm reminded of the movie Lincoln. You know, the Tommy Lee Jones character, the abolitionist Thaddeus Stevens, who leads the charge for the constitutional amendment to end slavery. And at the end of the film comes the big reveal. He had a black lover. And my first reaction in the theater was, aha, good. It's harder to dehumanize groups of people when you are close with individuals from the group. He fell in love with a black woman, and so he got it about slavery more than some other white people. But then I heard all this criticism of the film precisely for that big reveal, that it somehow cheapened Stephen's moral stand by making it look like he had personal rather than altruistic or moral reasons for his beliefs. So there's a parallel to this Portman argument that's taking place right now. So what do you think? For you, is a politician's stand on an issue less meaningful if it stems from personal experience? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Brian in Parsippany, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I just want to say that I'm really kind of frustrated. I think that it's absurd to blame Senator Portman for taking this position, as though it's cynical for him to have a late-in-life, eye-opening experience. I think that he's taking a lot more political risk. He's at least purportedly has presidential aspirations, and I'm a lot more cynical about Secretary Clinton and President Obama because their positions are really just aligning them with their party base, whereas Senator Portman is kind of sticking his neck out and I think showing some humanity.
It is certainly possible to interpret that way because Hillary Clinton's stand is no active leadership at this point. She's just playing catch-up for 2016 or for posterity. She has to endorse gay marriage to be a 21st century Democrat in that respect and certainly in order to run for president. And I agree. Portman's is harder. He's the only Republican senator, I believe, so far to take that stand or to make a change like that in recent times. And he may have been caught between his political career and having his son disown him. Who knows? And another thing about that, Brian, by way of political analysis, do you remember that Portman was the leading prediction to be Mitt Romney's running mate last year?
I do remember that.
But we now know he had begun to quietly go wobbly on the gay marriage issue during last year, though it didn't break out into the press, after his son came out. This is now being reported. And I'm almost sure that if Portman was ever in the running for running mate, that whole dynamic probably would have knocked him out. Too complicated a storyline, too off message for that Republican presidential ticket. 2016 might be different. We'll see. But I have a feeling that was a factor.
I think so, too.
Anyway, thank you for your call. And I think on the other side of this question is Luis in Brooklyn. Luis, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How are you? I feel similarly, actually, that none of these are genuine feelings that these people are having. They've been calculated risks that they've gone back and forth with their committees having. We know that the Reagans had good gay friends. We know the Bushes had good gay friends. But none of them went on a limb for it, you know, because it wasn't a risk they could take at the time. And it shows the kind of pull that I think Republicans are going to have to take, the sway they're going to have to take. If Portman's son had been into Bikini Babes, we would have been out of a lot of luck. And I just think it's very convenient for him to be able to do this at this time and use his son as a crutch for that, you know.
Right.
And I don't think anyone's looking for a benevolent pat on the head from the Republicans. Mm-hmm. They're just a cog in the machine that can pass some of these laws.
Well, part of the issue here, as framed by Iglesias, and I wonder what you think about it, that passage that I read before from his Slate piece, is about the nature of conservatism, whether self-interest
right.
is at the very heart of the conservative impulse. A conservative fights most passionately for his own. A liberal fights most passionately for others, maybe it's a reductionist argument. But do you think that's true?
Well, I think that it's all framed within a political character that's kind of changing to become this benevolent, open-hearted new conservatism. And I think that it's pretty fakey.
Yeah,
I think it is pretty see-through and that the argument's rather weak just because of his son that he's become this different person. It's late in the game and it's convenient.
Luis, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And how about some self-identified conservatives who might want to call in and respond to Matthew Iglesias on his larger critique of conservatism? If he's saying, and now I'm making up examples, but maybe you can plug these in, Conservatives on both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict only care about their people's land and victimization. Liberals on both sides recognize the humanity and aspirations of the other. True? Is that a liberal-Israeli, liberal-conservative, Palestinian kind of thing? Or conservatives on economics tend to be wealthier folks who believe in unregulated self-interest, that they deserve their wealth and the poor deserve their poverty. Wealthy liberals feel better than wealthy conservatives about being taxed on behalf of others. And this is the liberal framing of what conservatism is, right? So conservatives call up and reframe it if you want to, call up and reframe it if you can. But the basic question still on the table, is a politician's stand on an issue less meaningful if it stems from personal experience? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And here's Hillary in Brooklyn. Not that Hillary, right?
Hillary? No, not Hillary Clinton.
She's called once before, but she's not you.
Hi. No, I just wanted to say that this is not problematic at all. I mean, I think Richard Rorty talks about moral progress as the idea of increasing sensitivity to larger and larger groups of people. And although we might hope that that sensitivity could happen automatically, it's typically awakened by contact with suffering. And so I think if that's the way you first come to it, as long as you then extend that empathy widely, I don't think that's problematic. I mean, he's not asking that only his son be allowed to be married. He's now been awakened to the wider gay cause, and I think that's a good thing.
Do you have any thoughts one way or the other about that argument on conservatism and whether it's more rooted in self-interest?
I mean, it's hard for me to speak broadly about that, but I do think that the question is whether when people are confronted with something, they then do take that as a reason to think more broadly. So if Portman now takes this as an example that makes him think that perhaps he should think about what if his son was poor or some other thing, then it could be the sort of catalyst to get him thinking about that sort of thing.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it a lot. And Steve in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? First time, long time. I just wanted to say that I think no matter whose comments it is, be it President Obama's or Portman's, you know, the way in which they frame their conversation, in other words, calling in personal stories or anecdotes or whatever, is really more just how they're speaking to the people and how they're trying to convince their audience of their political stand. I think it's more indicative of that than necessarily their own process for coming to those realizations. In other words, I don't know if Obama really thought about his, you know, people in his cabinet working for him as much as he just kind of knew that gay marriage should be legal, but was waiting for the right time to say so.
Right. I have a feeling in Obama's case it probably was that, waiting for a time that was either acceptable politically or advantageous politically, as it probably was in the course of the presidential campaign, trying to mobilize all those groups who would come out and vote for him, and taking the calculated risk by 2012 that there would be less of a backlash than there would be something to gain. And the politics for Portman would be different. If he's going to run for Senate again in Ohio, which actually passed an anti-gay marriage, it might be a state constitutional amendment, I'm not sure, back in 2004, or if he's going to try to run for president or vice president as a Republican, the political calculus is a little more complicated in his case.
It is more complicated, but it does seem, as public opinion changes, that, you know, all the talk after the election last year was that, you know, the Republicans are going to have to learn to shift a little bit, and that might be what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, maybe. And who knows if there wasn't also a personal calculation in here. What if you are against what your own son feels is a stand for his personal humanity? So was there a little pressure exerted to come around and change, or a fear of alienation from his own son? I don't know, and you know, I don't know if it's fair to ask an individual that, but you know, it's not out of bounds to speculate about that. Dan in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Good morning. You know, when you started the show, you said that you asked whether this was an act of selfishness, and I really believe that it's not a matter of selfishness. I think it is. It is an indication of his narrow-mindedness and his inability to think about the issue and in terms of its human impact. It has to happen to him personally before you can actually see what the issue is. And I see that in the same vein. I see the situation with gun control. Does it would it take that the people who support guns and oppose any kind of changes in the law, would it take that for them to lose a son or a daughter before they would actually see the issue?
You know, one place I take that argument is that it argues for the importance of diversity in politics and elsewhere. You know, if Mexicans or Muslims or pick your group are just an abstraction to one, then your political opinions are less likely to take their full humanity into account than if they sit with you in the House floor, sit with you in your office, something like that. So if we accept, whether we like it or not, that human nature, liberal, conservative, otherwise, is subject to contact theory, you know, we fully accept the humanity of the people we know better as individuals rather than parts of groups of others, then it really argues, it seems to me, for the importance of policies that encourage diversity in schools and workplaces and political sector. Have any reaction to that?
Well, I totally agree with that, but I think people should be able to especially when you elect politicians, you would into high office, you would expect them to be able to think about the issues from a humanistic, from a different perspective than only this narrow, you know, what does it do for me? And here is an example of a man who had to wait until it actually hit home, until he had a conversation with his son to realize that this was a much bigger issue than just his son. And that's pathetic.
Thank you for your call. And I think Dan makes a good point about the nature of leadership. It's not in most people's nature to advocate for the interests of others. People who do that are the exception. And I would call them leaders. Those acts or profiles encourage political risk to yourself to advocate for other people's legitimate interests if they contradict with your own. And it's rare enough in public life and private life, but maybe that's where leadership is rare and people need to come by it however they come by it. The development of empathy through contact is more normal but a good thing. Of course, you don't always, to argue against my own point, you don't always develop empathy through contact, right? Look at the Democrats and Republicans sitting with each other in Washington, and they are so totally polarized in a divided Congress. So it doesn't always work that way, but it still probably mostly works that way, that more contact breeds compassion rather than contempt. Anyway, we will leave this conversation there for now. Thank you for all your calls on various aspects of the question. And our comments page is wide open. I have a feeling this one will continue for a while. So go continue this discussion if you want at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Coming up next, Stop and Frisk Goes to Court. We'll review the language from day one in a trial that actually asked if stop and frisk is constitutional. Stay with us.